Blog Talk Radio.
This is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I still need my negative W word. I'll look into that this coming week. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and thanks for being here, everybody. Thanks for listening in. Whatever purpose we serve as far as that goes, if we're your companion while you're driving, while you're at the gym, while you're sitting around doing nothing, if the dulcet tones of Jeff and I are what put your, child to sleep every night, I'm just glad we can be helpful, and I'm glad you're listening. So thank you all very much. Should be a relatively short show this evening. We are just reviewing UFC Fight Night 107. It's a couple of weeks before the next UFC event, which I believe is UFC 210, which is it's an interesting card. Hopefully it all holds together. Plenty of time for that to fall apart. But hopefully it holds together. So we'll be doing that. And, of course, whatever news happens to have come up this particular week. With that in mind, if you have a question, comment, anything like that you would like to get on the air, I'm happy to take live callers at 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. All right. Here with me, as always, 411 Mania's jack of all trades, because he's in all the zones, folks. And my regular partner in crime for this show, Jeff Harris, is with us. How you doing this evening, Jeff?
I am on day two of a 3-day cleanse, and I am getting through it pretty okay. So I'm doing all right. A juice cleanse, by the way, in case you're wondering.
I hope you're feeling just as good tomorrow.
Honestly, it's not too bad. Just as long as I stay hydrated. So I'm enjoying it. I like juice, so it's good juice.
That does help. So apparently it was Jimmy Manoa, because, geez, that guy put on muscle mass. I kid, but, I know, the main...
Manoa. Manoa.
Yeah, then the main event for UFC Fight Night 107, Jimmy Manoa, he knocked Corey Anderson out at 3 minutes of the first round, 305. Woof. It was pretty clear. I mentioned that he had gotten bigger, again, jokingly, but no, seriously, the man has put on some upper body muscle mass. If you look over his last, two fights, he dedicated. He put some time in the weight room. He's increased his muscle mass over his upper body, specifically the upper back and shoulders, a lot. Again, since the fight with Anthony Johnson where he got knocked out. Jimmy Manoa has only lost in the UFC to Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson. He's pretty good. This fight, again, ended in the first round. He blocked some takedowns from Corey Anderson, tagged him with a couple of punches. Anderson circled right into a left hook. It was one and done. This was one left hook right on the button from Manoa. Anderson stiffened up, fell over. Again, just done. One shot, unconscious. And that was it. That was all she wrote. Jimmy Manoa asked for a title shot following this win. I'm not sure how feasible that is. Given that again, John Jones is scheduled to return in July, assuming that plays out appropriately, then you know you could have it. And there's the DC Rumble fight, which could throw a monkey wrench into a lot of different things. I mean, again, he's ranked number 4 because Ryan Bader got released, so everyone moves up a spot. Yay. Yeah. Yay for earning things by removing roadblocks. Man, we'll lower the standard and everyone can pass. Sorry. No, Manawood's, I'm just not sure a title shot is his next fight. I think he's going to have to fight one more time just with the timing. And, you know, I don't hate it. He could fight Glover Teixeira. I think depending on, I don't know what Teixeira's got coming up off the top of my head. He could even just have a resume builder because really, I think the biggest name he has that he's beaten in the UFC is either OSP or in this instance, Corey Anderson. You know, let's get him in there with, I'd like to see him have one more fight as a resume builder or against, you know, one of the top like 4 guys. And I know he already lost to Gustafson and now he trains with Gustafson. So that might be an issue. But I think he's going to need one more before he gets the title shot. But if he wins his next fight, you know, we could finally break up the monotony of the Big 4. You know, the division needs a little bit of life. The UFC has forced this kind of change by, oh, Phil Davis, Ryan Bader. I mean, you're not good enough to be champion, but you're good enough to beat 95% of the division. So go away. But they have forced said change on us, and Jimmy Manuel is the immediate recipient, beneficiary, rather, of all that, you know, those decisions. And he had a, you know, good, beautiful knockout to go along with. That was a lovely left hook. All right, Jeff, what do you got to say about the poster boy? Because, dang.
He showed up last night and looked good, and he fought an opponent who was arguably a really bad style matchup for him. A guy who likes to take you down and grind you. He kept the fight where he needed it, and he used his boxing. And he knocked out a top 10 opponent. Now, Corey Anderson isn't the most electrifying fighter, but he was a pretty good surging prospect. And this is a really solid win for Manoa. And it's good. He's in a good position right now because – oh, just heard a weird beep. I'm sorry. He's in a good position because light heavyweight has been gutted. You know, guys like Ryan Bader are out of the picture. It looks like Nikita Krylov is out of the picture. And Misha Sirkunov, he was almost out of the picture, but thankfully he re-upped with the UFC and he'll still be fighting. But what's the reason this is good for Manoa is because this kind of like the heavyweight division, it kind of quickens the line, as it were. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean he'll be the next guy to definitively get a title shot, but with, look, between injuries, between USADA, between John Jones getting into trouble, he's in a pretty good position where something could happen where he'd be a very active, good guy they could call up to come in. You know, and the reason I say that is because it's the reality of what we've been dealing with for the last several years, where we've seen the craziest fights falling off for the craziest reasons as of late. And I don't think we can discount that. I mean, I think you have to sort of almost plan for it at this point. And I think Manoa, after this kind of fight and performance, he's one of the better choices you can go with.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If you have any need to either fill in on short notice or even, you know, less than short, if you just have, you know, if you're 3 months out and a fight falls through for the, you know, near the top of the division, you could easily substitute in Jimmy Manoa at this point, and it would make a tremendous amount of sense.
Look, Cormier gets hurt a lot. He's been pulling out of fights lately, and so, and John Jones, every time it looks like, you know, he's back and he's ready and he's got his life in order, something else happens with him, right? So Manoa's, he's, now that he's looking this good, there are so many. He's got a lot. There's a lot of upside to him right now. And he tends to recover from losses very well, too.
Yeah, and it helps that he doesn't. Again, I think the only, I think his only career losses are actually to Gustafson and Rumble. And, you know, those are.
I think you're right.
I know, but those are his only UFC losses. No, those are his only losses, period, yeah.
But what's going on with Gustafson? I think he's injured right now, and he's kind of, he hasn't fought in a while. He fought last September.
He is scheduled to fight. No, he's fighting Glover on May 28th.
Okay, there we go.
Current plan.
So that's a good fight. That's a good fight. That's a good matchup. Now, that being said, it's very good that Ryan Bader's out of the picture because, you know, while I think striking-wise he matches up very well against Bader, you know, the wrestling would have been a big problem for him. So, again,
yeah, you'd have been scheduled to fight Ryan Bader, and Ryan Bader would have smother-humped him for three rounds.
Possibly. I think based on this performance, he maybe could have done the opposite. He could have knocked Bader out.
He could have. I'm just playing the odds there. I mean, again, Manoa hits hard enough, and
It's a good prediction, but I don't even think before this fight Manoa had really fought many good MMA, like, or just any really good collegiate wrestlers. Really, I think Anderson was. I mean, certainly Gustafson has good MMA wrestling, but he's not a wrestler. I think Anderson was kind of the first kind of wrestler type fighter he fought. Was it not?
At least in the UFC, because he fought
in the
UFC. Kyle King's. Yeah, it was Kyle Kingsbury, not a wrestler. Cyril Diabate is a kickboxer. Ryan Jimmo,
right.
And then
exactly.
Gustafson, Blachowicz, Jensen. Maybe you can argue OSP is more of a wrestler, but I think was more of an athlete.
He was a
college
football player.
Yeah, no, he was more of an athlete wrestler than a wrestler.
And OSP isn't good. He's not good with wrestling at all, if you recall.
Not defensively, at least.
The thing for Manoa is light heavyweights, even though it's in crisis, it's a smaller pool right now, and that could create opportunities for Manoa. But we'll see.
Yeah, again, he's right near the top now. I imagine he's going to have to fight one more time before he gets a title shot, but he's up there at this point. He got some eyes on him now at a minimum. All right, in the co-main event, Gunnar Nelson reminding everyone of just how good Damian Maia is.
You're not
defeated Alan Jobe
correctly, Robert. His name is Gunnar Bloody Nelson.
No, it's Gunny. His nickname is Gunny, G-U-N-N-I.
I'm calling him. No, he's Gunnar Bloody Nelson. That's what John Gooden called him last night. That's what we should all call him. He wants your blood. When he's in the cage, he wants your blood, and he's going home with your blood in his soul because he's stolen it.
Again, Gunnar Nelson did a tremendous job of reminding everyone just how good Damian Maia is. He smoked Alan Joban pretty much.
How about how good Gunnar Bloody Nelson is, Robert?
Oh, Gunner's tremendous. I mean, that's kind of my point there. Just you look at what Gunnar Nelson does to basically everybody. Gunnar Nelson is tremendous in so many ways. And then
he's
remember that Damian Maia shut him down.
He's a stone cold blooded killer. He's not human. He's like aliens created him in a lab to go to Earth and like take people apart, basically. He's been genetically altered to look like a human, but he's not. You see what I'm saying?
I do. Now, again, he ran over basically Alan Joban. He struggled a little bit through the first half of the first round to get the fight to the mat and a little bit with closing distance on Joban. Joban did a really good job with leg kicks, especially the inside leg kick. They were opposite stances. And did a decent job most of the time of keeping his back off of the cage. Two very important facets. But then he got rushed a little bit, and I hadn't thought about this. I heard someone else mention it. I think it was Luke Thomas. that Joban has he's got a good skill set, but he doesn't react well under fire, under pressure. It's one of the reasons that whenever he would get sucked into a brawl, he would start losing because he didn't react the best under those conditions. And why the majority of his success comes when he's, you know, again, not in that situation, when he's able to just kind of focus on his game plan where he excels and doesn't have to react too much to what his opponent's doing, certainly not very quickly. And Gunnar got him down, mounted him, kind of rode out the first round. In the second round, Gunnar hit a really nice kind of – he has this weird almost like fencing style wide stance, kind of bouncy, and he will lunge in and out, but he will remain – he doesn't lunge the way a lot of fighters lunge where they bend at the waist and then spring forward, which is terrible. He just kind of maintains his vertical posture essentially, hopped forward – beautiful straight right down the middle, wobbled Joban, kicked him in the head, grabbed the guillotine choke as they were going down, made one minor adjustment, and that's all she wrote. Alan Joban taps. Gunnar Nelson got to go back to taking the nap they woke him up from to come out for this fight, because that man, seriously, I don't think his expression ever changes. If anyone ever tells you they saw Gunnar Nelson smile, they're probably lying. Again, it was a really, really good performance from Gunnar Nelson. He continues to excel at what we knew he excelled at. And I imagine he's got another shot at the top. He should take on a ranked opponent this time, maybe top five, certainly top 10. And, you know, let's get him back, you know, to test his mettle against them. I mean, again, he lost to Damian Maia, but Damian Maia could easily be the next welterweight champion. And not a whole lot of shame there. Again, just another great, great outing from Gunnar Nelson as far as, you know, what we know his skill set to be. And, again, move him up the card, you know, move him up in competition a little bit. I don't hate the idea of him fighting Robbie Lawler, to be perfectly honest, assuming Lawler comes back, but, or, you know, maybe, I don't know where Masvidal would rank if he loses to Maia. I mean, if he just wanted a fun fight, him and Donald Cerrone would have a pretty good scrap. But no, again, Gunnar, tremendous job, reminding everyone that he is in fact very good. Jeff, you seem to have a lot of praise for Gunnar Nelson.
Man, Gunnar Nelson is a stone cold blooded killer. If this was the Wild West, he would be like Lee Van Cleef in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. For a few dollars more. The dude is gnarly. And when he's on point, he is deadly. And his striking was on point last night. And here's the thing. He maybe could have stopped Joban with strikes. But instead, he went in for the guillotine. He secured a guillotine when Joban looked like he already could have been out. And the fact that Joban had enough of his senses to tap out to that guillotine looked miraculous, because he looked dead out on his back when he was in that guillotine, honestly. I don't know how he had the strength to even tap out. I don't know if getting put in it maybe woke him up and he realized he was losing oxygen, but that was insane. Insane finish. It was stunning.
Did you hear what Gunnar said about why he went for the submission instead of trying to finish with strikes?
I didn't hear that. What was it?
He said, Joban's a good-looking guy. He's a model. I didn't want to take that away from him.
The guy has a good sense of humor. What can you say?
He does. He's a funny guy.
I think he could still contend for the title at some point, depending on how things pan out. Hopefully the title will get off Tyron Woodley and we'll get a reasonable champion who's not constantly calling out George St. Pierre, who will defend the title against a guy like Gunnar Nelson. I want to see Gunnar Nelson in a UFC title fight at some point. And I think if he keeps making these improvements, I think – because I honestly feel like he's more well-rounded and better than he was when he first stepped into the UFC. And he was undefeated when he came into the UFC. And he was pretty and he was still pretty dominant until he ran into, you know, Rick Story, who's a tough, you know, tough athlete, tough physical matchup. But I think he can still get at least into the title mix. And problem is we have Robbie Lawler and Carlos Condit. They're both in the top five right now. Lawler's been out of it for a while. It doesn't seem like he's getting a fight lined up anytime soon. Condit, we don't even know if he'll even fight again. And I don't even know if Condit would want to fight a guy like Nelson if he were to fight again. So there's that. Maybe Don Young Kim. I don't think they've fought before.
Let me
Young
check.
Kim, either Don Young Kim, Neil Magny is ranked above him.
He and Magny would be an interesting fight, actually.
Interesting fight. Kim might be the better fight for him just because I think Kim's had a couple wins. Okay, so Kim's won his last three, and Gunnar's won his last two. So I'm thinking Dong Young Kim versus Gunnar Nelson's the best choice right now. Nelson is ranked number 9, but he arguably could be ranked higher. Kim's ranked number 7. I think that's the best choice, all things considered, just looking at where the rankings are right now. I don't think Cerrone Nelson makes sense just yet. I think you want to give Cerrone a lower ranked, like give Cerrone Jake Ellenberger or something, is what I'm feeling.
I can't believe Jake Ellenberger's still ranked.
He's ranked. He's still in the UFC. So, but what do you think of that matchup, Nelson versus Kim? I think that's a very interesting matchup too.
Yeah, I'm down for that. I constantly forget that Dong Yun Kim is, like, a thing. I don't know why he keeps escaping my mind. I know.
Kim is good.
I'm well aware of his abilities. I just, for some reason, he's the one, like, top-level welterweight who I keep forgetting exists, almost. And it's weird, because I'm well aware of how good he is.
He just constantly slips my
mind.
You know why? Because Kim, he's like always in that position where it's about he's on the cusp of getting into that title mix, but then he falls short. He loses to – he gets knocked out by Woodley or Carlos Condit, and that's kind of what's been and he's had, you know, some uneventful fights as well. So that's why you forget, because he's been a perennial top 10, top 5 guy, if you think about it. He's sort of been almost like a Michael Bisping of the division, if you really – or a Ryan Bader, if you really want to get down to it. And you kind of only focus on those really top five elite opponents.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't – again, he doesn't lose very often, and he only loses to very good guys. You know, I'm completely down for Nelson and Kim now that I think about it, because Kim's a smothering top guy if he gets to that position. Good judo base, bit of a wild striker. I like that. I'm down for that fight. All right. Oh, man, this fight. This was a heartbreaker. Marlon Vera defeats Brad Pickett via TKO. Head kick and punches at 3:50 of the third round. This was Brad Pickett's final fight. He made known going into it this was going to be his last fight. He was retiring. And in his hometown, front of the home crowd, and he was winning. I had him up 2 rounds. I believe 2 of the ringside judges did as well, going into the third. Vera was competitive for the first 2 rounds, but I had Pickett winning them. Vera was doing good in the striking once he got Pickett kind of loading up on punches, and he could... He had a really nice intercepting knee strike that he was using on Pickett. Anytime Pickett kind of ducked his head and tried to close distance, it was a really nice technique. And he had good body kicks going. And at distance, Vera was very competitive. he just kind of struggled when Pickett would close distance, get him down. He struggled off of his back a little bit against Pickett. And again, I had Pickett winning the first two rounds, and then into the third, Vera still doing a lot of what he'd been doing before. He just found a couple of good knee strikes towards the chin of Pickett that seemed to, I don't want to say they hurt him, because I don't think they hurt him, but they affected what he was doing. And then he finally connected on a head kick. Pickett falls over a couple of hammer fists later, and that's all she wrote. Again, this was a heartbreaker for Brad Pickett fans because he was doing so well. Again, competitive, but he was still winning. And then, you know, a couple of minor positional issues and then one head kick, and that was it. Not a bad fight, all things considered, but again, from a story perspective, this was an absolute heartbreaker. Especially for a guy who's been around as long as Pickett has and who's done as much as he has, especially in the British MMA scene. He was a big part of, you know, that scene for a long time, especially for some of the smaller British guys getting them into the sport. Major, major credit to everyone involved after the fight. Because Marlon Vera, who, again, just finished the hometown guy, got booed a little bit when he started his interview, but gave a great interview after he told the fans, and in somewhat broken English, he's from Ecuador, English is his second language, told the fans, hang on, I have to give respect to Brad Pickett, put Brad Pickett over, said, you know, I was watching this guy beat Demetrius Johnson when I was in high school, he's a legend, I wanted a big fight. The UFC finally gave me one in the form of Pickett. He did it just gave Brad Pickett every ounce of possible respect, put over, you know, again, a bit of his own abilities. Cause he's man, there are some stories out there, articles, like actual stories, not just, you know, word of mouth stuff about some of the financial stuff that's happened to Marlon Vera. And so this was a very emotional moment for him as well. And, you know, again, I liked the way he handled it. Dan Hardy, who interviewed both guys, before he even asked Brad Pickett a question, did a tremendous job of putting him over, telling him, because, you know, Pickett was pretty busted up about this. You know, some of the things he said before giving Pickett, you know, the mic time to say goodbye to the fans, to thank his coaches, so on and so forth. It just about as perfectly handled a post-fight situation as you could have ever, ever expected to see in combat sports, not just MMA, all of them. So again, a lot of respect to all the parties involved for that. And Brad Pickett's never been my favorite fighter, but he's always been good for a fight. And I've seen quite a few of his fights that, and again, I don't think I ever saw a bad one. So thanks to Brad Pickett for the years and the miles and the entertainment and, you know, what he put his body through for those of us who just enjoy the sport. A lot of thanks to him for all the years. So thank you, Mr. Pickett, for all of that. I think that's all I've got. Jeff, again, this broke my heart watching it, and I'm not nearly as emotionally attached to Pickett as a lot of other people are.
What about me?
That's why I'm... And, you know, that's kind of what I'm asking. I know you're a much bigger fan of Brad Pickett than I am.
I was devastated just because he was so close. He was doing the right things. He was fighting a good fight. And then just one kick. I mean, it's symbolic of just how just one little thing, just one strike can change the entire complexion of an MMA contest, and I'm heartbroken, I'm devastated. Marlon Vera was a complete and total class act in that victory, and I think he definitely deserves props and praise for the way he handled himself. You know, he was a guy who came in on very short notice fighting the hometown guy. Everyone wanted him to lose for that alone. He won, and he won spectacularly, despite – he won spectacularly in a fight he was losing and down on the scorecards. And all things considered, he handled himself and came across like a total mensch, as heartbroken and as devastated as I was. So, I mean, good on Marlon Vera, but, I mean, thank you to Brad Pickett because, you know, he kind of wasn't able to break through to that upper echelon, but, I mean, the man fought a who's who of the top guys throughout his weight class. He was known for his exciting fights, his great fights, his fight of the night performances, and being reliable for that. And, you know, he was a guy who was a British fighter who would come and train with the American top team. And look, there was a point he beat Demetrius Johnson. He beat Demetrius Johnson, you know, not long before Johnson became a title contender in his weight class at bantamweight, and before Johnson became the champion of flyweight and one of the greatest fighters on the planet. So I think that just says a lot about, you know, Pickett's accomplishments, his career, and just how tough he was overall. And as heartbroken as I am, I hope he'll do well. And I feel like he knows it's time to get out, and I think it is. And I think he's making the right decision, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, if he hadn't announced this was going to be his last fight, he should have probably. I mean, look, Marlon Vera is a young guy, and I don't want this to come across as any kind of, you know, pejorative to him. But if you're Brad Pickett and you've, you know, got all the years and all the miles and all the experience that you do, and you're going pretty evenly, again, winning, but evenly, and then finished by a guy, you know, like Vera at his point in his career, that would have been the final indicator that, yeah, it's time to get out. All right, and kicking off the main card, Arnold Allen defeated Makwan Amirkhani via split decision. 129-28 for Amirkhani, 230-27 for Allen. I believe I had this 30-27 for Allen. I'm not sure. The third round, I think, was the one that I thought could have gone to Amirkhani. I'd have to double-check my coverage as far as... I had Allen winning. I remember that much. This wasn't a bad fight. There were some really fun scrambles that took place between these two. This fight should be a nice object lesson to people about why you want to be good everywhere. You see, Amirkhani is a better wrestler than Arnold Allen. Showed that in this fight specifically. And I just much more credentialed wrestler as well. He's a multiple time Finnish national champion, or placing at the national level for both freestyle and Greco, I seem to recall. And he's physically stronger than Arnold Allen. Arnold Allen was good enough off of his back, the times he got put there, at creating situations where he could escape. He was good enough hitting reversals. He apparently has some tremendous balance, because if you look at some of the sweeps or, you know, mid takedown reversals that he was able to hit, those aren't easy to do. And he was just better enough everywhere, or good enough everywhere, that the couple of areas where Amirkhani was better weren't mattering as much. So really impressive from Arnold Allen, who, again, I didn't pick him to win this fight. He seriously overperformed here, exceeded a lot of expectations. Again, there's a lot of fun scrambles in this fight if you're into that sort of thing. Definitely worth looking up. As for Amirkhani, you know, again, this sucks. It's first UFC loss, but it was a competitive fight. Again, I scored it for Allen, but Amirkhani was not blown out by any stretch of the imagination. And he can rebound from this without too much problem, without too many problems, assuming, you know, nothing else, you know, goes catastrophically wrong. All right. Jeff, I think you're the one who said that Arnold Allen overperformed, and I kind of stole that line from you. What'd you think about this one?
Arnold Allen definitely overperformed here because, you know, Amirkhani was the guy. Both these guys were really good prospects who were unbeaten in the UFC. but I think Armie Ercani was the one getting a lot more attention. You know, he had dubbed himself Captain Finland, and he was getting a little more notoriety in the UFC. And I would say he was the heavy odds-on favorite. And then Arnold Allen really just came in, took this fight by storm, and by overperform, I guess what I mean is, it's when a fighter comes in and just dominates the guy you expected to win. And that's, isn't that pretty much what Allen did here? And not just with his takedowns and his MMA wrestling, and he constantly gave Amir Khani problems. And I mean by overperform, it was a good performance. And I was impressed with Arnold Allen.
Yeah, again, someone I think I kind of undersold last week when we were previewing this card. All right, on to the prelims. Joe Duffy defeats Reza Madadi via unanimous decision, 30-27 across the boards. I have to apologize to everyone who was following along with my coverage for this fight. My internet died from about halfway through the second round, clear through until the end of the fight. Thanks, Comcast. But from what I saw, and I will rewatch. I caught the third round, or like after I was done with coverage, because I wanted to be able to talk about it cogently. Joe Duffy's just very good, very solid fighter. Again, good boxing, good. He's got a good bottom game. His top game is good as well. His wrestling is, you know, takedowns could use some work, but if he gets on top, he's got some pretty wicked elbows. Just a really good outing from Duffy, who. That was the last fight on his contract, and I hope the UFC keeps him around because, again, he's good and worth keeping around. At light heavyweight, Francimar Barros defeated Darren Stewart via unanimous decision, 29-28 across the boards. I think I scored this for Stewart, but I freely admit that one I was probably wrong about. Fight kind of sucked. At heavyweight, Timothy Johnson, the man with the best facial hair in MMA, defeated Daniel Omielanchuk via split decision, 129-28 for Omielanchuk, 130-27, and then 29-28 for Timothy Johnson. I had this, I think, 29-28 Johnson. Might have been 30-27. I can't remember. I think it gave Omielanchuk the third. Anyway, I had Johnson winning. It was a crappy heavyweight fight. Not a whole lot to talk about. Leon Edwards defeated Vicente Luque via unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. Leon Edwards is pretty good. There's still some things he has to work on. But, you know, Vicente Luque is not a gimme. And he, you know, pretty clearly took that fight. At lightweight, ooh, boy howdy. Mark Jacquezi knocked the stupid out of Teemu Pakkalin. He knocked the hipster mustache right off of his face. This was a thing of beauty. He came out and he threw a couple of really nice-looking kicks, jump-spinning back kicks, both to the face and one to the body. Then he baited Pakkalin into coming forward. Guys, this is why you don't get lazy with your lead hand. Pakkalin got lazy, threw a kind of a looping jab, you know, a lazy hook. Jacquezi faded back, waited for that to miss, and then right hand to the face. Pakkalin was out on his feet and remained upright for about half a second. Again, unconscious and stiff as a board before his balance shifted and he fell over. This was the highlight reel that Jacquezi was known for on the local scene. Tremendous punch. It was only a 30-second fight, but yeah, I'm not sure where Jacquezi goes because lightweight is, it's a crazy division, but that man has serious power and is not to be taken lightly. Middleweight, Brad Scott defeated Scott Askham via split decision. 129-28 for Askham, 229-28 for Scott. I scored this for Askham, but I don't think going the other way is wrong. Not a whole lot to talk about. Women's bantamweight, Lena Landsberg defeated Lucy Pudilova via unanimous decision, 29-28 across the boards. I strongly disagreed with this. I gave Pudilova the first round, Landsberg the second, and then Pudilova the third. Rounds two and three are easy, one for Landsberg and Pudilova, respectively. It's the first round that's kind of in dispute. And I don't – I just felt that Pudilova was more efficacious, and she was – and there was a lot of clinching done, and Landsberg started the round holding her on the fence and ended the round holding her on the fence. But I felt a lot of the stuff in the middle that Pudilova did was just superior to what Landsberg accomplished. And then again, Pudilova's closed incredibly strong. Landsberg's right eye was a mess. I mean, that thing was badly, badly swollen. If she has that same swelling between rounds two and three, there is no third round. I mean, that's a fight-stopping swelling. It only happened, again, towards the tail end of the third, so no such luck getting the doctor to step in that case. But, again, I scored it for Pudilova. Not sure. I'm fairly sure she'll be brought back, but I'm not sure what her ceiling might be as far as that goes. She's still very young, so hopefully there's room to grow and bounce back from this. There were two bouts canceled about an hour before the event started. Ian Entwistle, who missed weight, wound up in the hospital, and the doctors advised the fight be canceled. Then, I knew about that one about an hour before the event started. Then, like, at the top of the broadcast, John Gooden and Dan Hardy, our commentators, said, also, Tom Breeze was deemed unfit to compete and pulled from his bout as well against Oluwole Bamjose. Kind of sucked to have two fights pulled out from under you at the last second there. Want to get into that, those two specifically, when we talk a little bit about the news. But, Jeff, that was a group of prelims. Anything you want to talk about from them?
Not so much.
Alrighty. Again, very briefly, Tom, the only one about the Tom Breeze fight being canceled, from his manager, so again, feel free to take this with as much salt as you feel necessary. Apparently all day he'd been dealing with an elevated heart rate, and as he got to the arena, it became significant, and they decided he wasn't in the right state, either physically or emotionally or mentally or some combination of the three, to actually compete, and they had to call the fight at the last minute. I don't have a problem with it as such. You're about to engage in unarmed combat. If you don't feel up to that, don't do it. I'm not going to – I sucks as a fan because I was actually kind of looking forward to that fight. But, again, if there was something off and he decided to, not do that, all right. I'm not going to get too down on him for that. Jeff, again, those two being called, hours before in the last hour leading up to the event, that's a first, right? I mean, we've had occasional fights fall through, again, hours before the event. Some guys have injured themselves warming up backstage, which sucks, but happens. I don't think we've ever had two in that rapid a succession right before a card starts, right?
It was very strange, but from what I've read, this was probably the best move because if a doctor recommends the fight shouldn't happen, it probably shouldn't happen. And it sounds like it's weird when we hear like a fighter was not fit to compete because it's very cryptic. It could mean any number of things. It could mean, for all we know, it could mean he was hungover, drunk, or high. It could mean that too, but it could also mean he had a medical issue. Maybe he could have had a panic attack. That happened to Stefan Struve the night he was supposed to fight Matt Mitrione. So I think, based on everything I've read, it was for the best that the fights were called off. But I think you're right. I can't recall any time it's happened where two fights the same day essentially were called off, basically.
Yeah, again, that's a first for me. Again, individual fights have happened. Again, there's a lot of fights. There's a lot of cards. Again, and there's like 12 fights per card, so there's a fair amount of there's more than enough opportunity for randomness like that to happen. But I think that's the first time twice in such rapid succession has occurred. All right, that was Fight Night 107. It was an afternoon card here in the States to be evening in the UK where it was held. Thanks to everyone who followed along, and not a whole lot of traffic for this one, but thanks to the people who were there. And oh, I have to congratulate commenter Negan, who is apparently the first two chat room simultaneous world champion, two comment board world champion on 411 Mania, because he got first comments on both a professional wrestling event that was going on around the same time and this one. So congratulations, sir. For whatever it's worth, a little bit less than the average World Series of Fighting title, I imagine, but congratulations nonetheless. All right. Jeff, was there any news this week? I seem to recall it being a little bit on the lighter side, but I've been wrong about that before.
There were a couple news bits I think might be of interest. Asking Ye Shall Receive, Kelvin Gastelum, he has his next fight lined up, and it is Anderson Silva, and it's happening at UFC 212. So the legend, the UFC's own version of the legend killer, will get his next legend, and that legend is Anderson Silva, and you must be absolutely thrilled, Robert Winfrey.
I mean, this continues to just postpone us getting an accurate assessment of Kelvin Gastelum at middleweight, but hey, if he wants to get paid.
He's never lost a fight at middleweight, and I mean, he beat Uriah Hall when Uriah
Hall was
the favorite on The Ultimate Fighter.
He was only the favorite because people were stupid. I think I actually seem to I remember this rather vividly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off of that season when we did the roundtable picks for that fight, I think we all picked Kelvin Gastelum, and a lot of the comment section questioned our. A few were questioning our intelligence, and one or two accused us of like just being hipsters and picking against the grain for the sake of doing so. And then, you know, Gastelum wins.
Mm-hmm.
Look, guys, no, that wasn't the case. We just assessed that, oh, look, another guy on The Ultimate Fighter who is hyped and made out to be a dynamic, explosive, powerful finisher against a solid all-around grindy wrestler. How many times have we seen this before on a finale for Tough? Several times. And how many times has it gone the way of said explosive dynamic finisher? Not frequently. There is history here. But I mean, again, years ago he beats Uriah Hall, and Hall's a bit of a bust. Not a total bust, but a little bit. Over the hill, Nate Marquardt. He beats over the hill, Tim Kennedy. And he beats
Kennedy,
way over the
hill. Okay, give me a break. Tim Kennedy wasn't over the hill. He hadn't fought in a while, but he wasn't over the hill. Please.
Okay. He beat 3-year layoff and at the end of his career, Tim Kennedy, whether that's over the hill or not.
It wasn't a 3-year layoff. It was like two years and change, basically.
Yeah. Significant layoff.
Okay.
And a guy, again, so hadn't fought in a long, again, significant layoff. And a guy who retired immediately thereafter. And then he beats, again, Vitor Belfort, who is, like, over the second hill at this point.
Yeah, but it wasn't like Kennedy was in bad shape. And he lost, like, a tough fight to Yoel Romero before that. And before that, he beat current UFC middleweight champion Michael Bisping. So, and was unbeaten in the UFC. So it's not like, I think you're being a bit, unfair to Gastelum here. Even though I'm not this huge Kelvin Gastelum fan, I think you're underselling some of his accomplishments in the octagon.
I just want to see him fight relevant top shelf opposition so
All
I
right.
can figure out where he fits in the division.
All right.
And
so let
I
me
have
ask
nothing
this question. Is
okay.
this a fight Anderson, is this a fight Anderson Silva should take right now?
That's an interesting one.
Because you want to know what my answer would be? No. But it's not my – I'm not the promoter. I'm not Anderson Silva. It's not my decision. So
if I'm
go.
Anderson Silva, I don't take this fight because I don't think there's a lot of upside, and I don't think he can win. I mean, let me rephrase that. He can win. It's a fight, and he's got a skill set that can give Gastelum problems in the sense that he's taller, he's longer, he's accurate with his strikes. Generally, though, I think more often than not, he loses this fight. And there's just...
I think it's going to be worse than what he did to Vitor. I don't like it at all, but...
Anderson's better than... Anderson's not in the same spot physically that Vitor is, but I don't give Anderson much more of a chance than I gave Belfort. I give him a little bit more because skill sets and physicality and whatnot, but I'm not giving Anderson a big chance to do this. I think Gastelum's going to overwhelm him and beat him up and probably finish him.
So as long as we keep Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway, I'm liking this card a lot, though, otherwise. And Claudio Gadelha is fighting Carolina Kovalkiewicz card. That's an outstanding fight for the women's strawweight division. So, there are a couple good fights on here, honestly. Both Gadelha and Kovalkiewicz gave Joanna Champion some very tough rounds. So that's a very interesting fight.
Now that's a good fight.
June 3rd in Rio de Janeiro. Another fight matchup, we have Roy Nelson versus Alexander Volkov, the next UFC on Fox card. So that'll be in April at Kansas City. So this will be the Johnson versus Hayes card. Rose Namajunas is fighting Michelle Watterson, and also
that's a really good that's a really good card for a Fox card. That's a really solid Fox card.
This is a very solid card. I imagine Nelson versus Volkov will be on the FS1 prelims. What else do we have here? Alex Oliveira got his he tried to appeal his no contest to the first fight with Tim Means, because of the illegal needs to get a change to a DQ victory. And it's the NSAC, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, rejected it.
Of course they did.
Else. So we still don't really know. So the UFC was able to re-up Misha Sirkunov. So he's back and he has his next fight lined up. Thankfully, so we're going to be keeping him around, which, you know, a guy like him is someone the light heavyweight division desperately needs, and he will be fighting Volkan Uzdemir at UFC Fight Night 109. So I think that's a decent matchup. Sirkunov, he's in a place now where he needs to keep the momentum going, and if he wants to get into that title mix, he's got to keep racking. He racked up a great win over Nikita Krylov, but that wasn't like a title eliminator. So this is a dangerous fight for him. Volkan Uzdemir could be a challenging fight. Let's see. So this is the Stockholm, Sweden card in May. So this is the one that will be headlined by Gustafsson versus Teixeira. This is a pretty decent fight night card, honestly. I imagine this will be a fight pass card, but that's a pretty – you know, considering you have Sirkunov, Gustafsson, Teixeira, you have some good light heavyweights going on there. So, like that fight. Those were, the main things that Sirkunov is staying in the UFC. They were able to get him back. I guess we still don't know what's going to happen with Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think there was talk about UFC getting it done in April. Again, I don't think it came together. So Ferguson wants Nate Diaz, and I understand that. I just don't think he's going to get Nate Diaz, Robert. And
he's not.
Connor looks like he's in no hurry to fight. So here's what I would say for Ferguson. Let Ferguson fight the winner of Poirier versus Alvarez. In a main event, if you want to make it an interim title, what the hell? Make it an interim title. And I think that would kind of give everyone a happy compromise. Or am I being terribly off there?
I don't think anyone's going to be happy with this situation no matter what we do.
Yeah, I think the best thing, like, depending on how that fight goes, I think if you put together Ferguson versus Alvarez, I think you can kind of make some sense. Best case scenario, Ferguson versus Alvarez for whatever. I think you can justify that in some ways. Can you not?
Yeah.
Because both both guys beat and dominated Rafael dos Anjos. Ferguson arguably should be fighting for the title right now. And then Khabib had it, you know, he has to recover from a really bad weight cut. Not only that, he has Ramadan starting, and he's not going to want to fight during that period, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't. For those of you who don't know, Ramadan is a period of time where those who are followers of Islam, they go like a whole month and don't from sun up to sundown. It's a month of fasting under that those conditions.
Right.
I would never personally engage in any kind of athletic competition under those circumstances. Certainly not MMA. There were a couple of, I think, American football players who were able to go through spring training during Ramadan, and it did a number on them physically, but I mean, you have to imagine the only food and water, again, it's both, they're both solids and liquids, they would eat in the morning and just pack on, you know, cram their bodies full of calories and hydration, train, and then you couldn't eat or drink until the sun goes down. I would never go through a training camp for a fight that way. I would.
Right.
It's just so problematic to try and do.
Okay. But what would you think about Ferguson fighting the winner of the Alvarez Poirier fight? Or should Ferguson fight someone else completely different?
I'm fine with him fighting the winner of that one. I mean, you're running out of top guys for him to fight, unless you want to do a rematch with Edson Barboza. I mean, it's basically like Alvarez or that fight within the next, like, 3 months.
All
right.
If he wants to wait longer,
like, into the fall, then you can remake the Nurmagomedov fight.
I think Alvarez is best-case scenario because, it's a fresh opponent for him. It's a fresh matchup for another. It's a great matchup, honestly.
The violence potential for Alvarez versus Ferguson is through the roof.
I mean, look, Alvarez, he got knocked out by McGregor, but he's still a champion. He's still a former champion. And, look, everyone's basically just biding time until Conor McGregor comes out of his cave and decides to fight in the UFC again. And it's just a difficult situation. And it could be – and in the chance that it is Poirier-Robert, I like that fight a lot, too. And Poirier – Poirier, he's had his losses, but he always recovers from them well, and he's a very violent, exciting fighter as well. So I like it either way if Ferguson were to fight one of those guys. It's just going to depend on timing and all sorts of other junk, but I like this idea I've come up with. I'm not saying it has to be for the interim title, but Ferguson is going to probably make us think about that and not going to agree to fight again unless it's for an interim title. So it's just going to – that's how it is right now. Guys don't – no matter what the fighters say, they would rather fight for an interim title than the actual title. Do you see what I'm saying?
They'd rather fight for a title because even if it's a fake interim belt,
they want to, because even if it's fake, you know, they can still say they're the champion and they get a gold belt.
Champion, and apparently, and the UFC's contracts, from what I understand, don't differentiate between champion and interim champion in terms of
right.
If you are champion, you make more,
but,
you get pay-per-view
like
points,
Ferguson,
so on and so forth.
Ferguson was on Helwani on the MMA Hour, and he was making a stink about, you know, he wants a belt that his son can play with, blah, blah, blah. When it comes time to signing his bout agreement, he's going to make a stink about that. So, you know, the guys on TV might say, you know, an interim title is meaningless and fake, but the fighters want something, even if it's interim, they want to call themselves champion. That's the fact of the matter. So there you go.
Again, you can forever say I was a champion, and again, you get paid more if you're a champion, whether that's actual champion or interim champion. I don't blame him one bit.
I'm sure that's part of Ferguson's logic, and I was fine with Ferguson or Nurmagomedov just because, like, look, Conor McGregor, he's totally – he hasn't been out of the picture long, but he's out of the picture, and he's not – and he's acting like he has no interest in fighting again. And then So we're dealing with that. And then who knows when Habib is going to be ready to fight again, and if he can even make lightweight, and if the UFC would even be confident booking him in another lightweight fight after what's happened these last two times with him. So with all those variables, I'm just thinking this is our best-case scenario here. Unless McGregor finally gets up and says, all right, I'm ready to fight and defend the belt. I'll fight Tony. Ideally, that's what I want to happen. I'll fight Tony Ferguson. I'll fight him on International Fight Week. I think that would be our best-case scenario at this moment. But I don't see – I don't even think if Conor McGregor fights on Fight Week, he's going to try and make it Floyd Mayweather in a boxing ring. But whatever. That's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah. Look, Conor McGregor has created a mess in this division.
In two divisions, really.
Yeah. Featherweight is kind of piecing itself back together slowly. Lightweight is now, again, a mess as well. Honestly, the problem isn't that he's not – it's not just that he won't be defending the belt until, you know, August, September, something like that. I'd be okay with that. I mean, really, guys have, you know, won a title and had an injury or needed to have surgery, and you've had guys
– Cain Velasquez, ahem.
Yeah, it's happened in the past. That doesn't bother – the distance between title win and first title defense is fluid for me personally in the sense that – you know, Cain Velasquez wins the belt, needs surgery, but says, as soon as, you know, I'm healthy, I'm going to fight, I'm going to defend it. It sucks because the belt's on the shelf, but you have both a timetable for a return and a lot of the dialogue and a lot of the narrative is about their return and when they're going to defend it. You get none of that with McGregor, so not only do we have a guy who said, no, I'm going, you know, I fought four times in 2016, which he did. I made a lot of money, which he did. My girlfriend or wife, I forget the particulars of their relationship, is pregnant. I want to take some time and, you know, deal with all of this. I have no problem with that, even in an MMA.
He only fought three times. He fought three times in 2016, right?
Just three?
Four. He fought Diaz twice and then Alvarez. Was there
Diaz
one?
Twice and Alvarez. Okay. I don't know why I was confusing. Anyway, again, fought three times in a year. That's above the average schedule or
right.
On the average, above average for the top level fighters. Made a lot of money. Again, if he was just like, I'm burned out, my girlfriend's pregnant, I'm taking 9 months, guys. And at the end of that period of time, I'm back, but I need, you know, time off. I understand. I think we're all reasonable people here as far as that goes. Unfortunately, the greater narrative surrounding him at this point is not, I'm coming back and I'm going to defend the belt. It's, I want to box Floyd Mayweather, which creates, in addition to the logjam that you get in a division like lightweight when the belt isn't active, you now have everyone thinking, well, he's never going to fight us. The logic becomes, okay, we have a vacant championship and there's a dog pile for it. And it just creates a greater sense of chaos than the structure that even an injured champion would if he said, no, I'm out. I'll be back right around, again, arbitrary date, September 5th, hypothetically. Again, I'll be back right around September. Line up a challenger. I'll defend the belt. I think even if that narrative is out there, the whole circumstance that we're dealing with is changed significantly. But because it's Conor McGregor and he's doing what he's doing, everything is chaos. I don't know. I might be wrong about that. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
But no, I like Ferguson and Alvarez or Poirier. That there's a lot of fun to be had there. I'm down for that fight.
Yeah. I think those are the main news items we had over the past week or so. Nothing else is really popping up. I think we kind of already addressed Ben Rothwell before. I don't even want to bring up the thing with John Jones just because it's like it's nothing really. And until there, it wouldn't surprise me if John Jones got in trouble again. But until something's happening there, I don't really think it's worth bringing up. Let's see. How is World Series of Fighting still in business?
They sold 60% of the company to an investment group, I seem to recall, towards the end of last year to kind of gain capital solvency.
Okay, so they had, I think they just, so they're still sort of chugging along. But,
yeah.
I mean, who knows how much longer they can keep that up. But, I mean, that's just kind of the thing when you're sort of an upstart MMA promotion. So it looks like Dave Branch got out at just the right time. And what about, what's going on? Did we get Sergio Moraes in the UFC yet? What's going on with him?
Marlon Moraes. And he is not with World Series of Fighting anymore. That's as far as that has progressed.
The UFC really needs to snatch up Marlon.
They should. Marlon Moraes is awesome for any of you who don't know.
I mean, I don't know how far he could get in the UFC, but just by his resume alone, he's gotten to a level where he should be, you know, he's kind of at, he's at a good age now, and he should be fighting. I feel like he should be fighting in the UFC. And I want him to see him get a shot, you know? But.
Yeah, I really want to see how he can do in the UFC. I would have him in the top. I think he's very competitive with the top eight or so in that division.
It was weird because, like, he was on MMA Hour and saying he re-upped with WSOF long-term. I guess not. I guess that was just a bunch of hot air. And then,
He re-upped for – I think he the way it worked out, he had signed a one-fight deal to be on their New Year's Eve card.
Yeah, but then he made it seem like the way MMA Fighting was reporting it, he said it was long, super long-term. And oh, I know these guys that I go out with them. They know my wife, blah, blah, blah. But if he's a free agent.
All
now,
I know is World Series of Fighting had an event yesterday. And there was a fight for the vacant
stripped of the title.
Bantamweight title. That's all I know.
He was stripped of the title. So, Moraes and both great Dave Branch, they picked just the right time to get out of there, if you think about it. Now that Dave Branch is back in the UFC, I'm hoping Moraes will get his shot he so richly deserves, just because he is awesome, and he's been beating guys left and right, and I hope he gets it. I don't think there's any other major news items we have to go that came out, unless you can think of something.
No, just very briefly, as far as that WSOF card went, the main event, Blagoy Ivanov knocked out Sean Jordan. They crowned a new featherweight champion, and the guy who won that belt, I forget his name, my apologies. Not a major player yet, but someone you might want to keep your eye on. He's a pretty legitimate guy, especially for that level. And then again, there was a vacant bantamweight title fight, which leads me to believe Marlon Moraes is no longer with them and will hopefully be in the UFC sooner rather than later, because, again, I've watched Marlon Moraes on WSOF for a few years now, and I'm a big believer in his abilities. I'm not saying champion, but he's a top-shelf bantamweight, unquestionably. No, I think that's everything. So what do you got to plug?
All right. So my latest review of Samurai Jack for the new season, check that out. Check out my review of the number one movie in America, Disney's live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast. Made $170 million this weekend, beating Batman versus Superman as the largest March film release ever. Check out my review of Marvel's Iron Fist, which I will say, all things considered, was not as bad as some of the early reviews and critiques were making out to be. Is it flawed? Yes. Is it problematic? Yes. Do I think Scott Buck was the wrong showrunner to helm this ship? Yes. But it wasn't a terrible show, and I think it has its good qualities. And I hope it gets a second season, and I hope they can make corrections to fix it, and I hope they get a better showrunner, and I hope it sticks around, but we'll see. So check out my review of that as well. It is probably one of the few more positive, even-handed reviews of Iron Fist, in my opinion. And so those are my main things for this week. Robert really enjoyed your coverage last night, and I think we have a solid group of followers and commenters in the MMA zone, all things considered.
Yeah,
that are
I do.
Coherent and enjoyable.
I really like those guys. They're a good bunch of guys to hang out with and check in with, again, when I get a chance between fights. We will be off next week, unless some major news happens, or, you know, a major story, we might make an exception, but otherwise, we will be off the 26th, and we will be back the 2nd of April to preview UFC 210. There's no event
right
for the next couple of weeks.
Except for WrestleMania, but that's wrestling.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not exactly amped up for WrestleMania this time around.
I don't think you're in the, well, I think many would agree with you. Let me just say
why
that.
Is AJ Styles wrestling Shane McMahon? He's AJ freaking Styles.
It's Shane McMahon, who's like 47 and shouldn't really even be anywhere near a wrestling ring. Not just because he's 47, but he's really not a wrestler. And the last time he was in a match, he almost got – I just
yeah,
don't get it at
all. Yeah, because Roman Reigns sucks. Now that, I blame Roman as much for that one as anyone else. But
yeah,
you've got AJ, who's maybe the best wrestler on God's green earth, and you're wasting him with Shane McMahon.
It's wrong. It's like the year they wasted Shawn Michaels on Vince McMahon, basically. So
with less narrative cohesion. At least that made sense from a storyline perspective.
It didn't make sense to me either back then, but and I hated every minute of it. So we have that going on. So yeah, I look forward to when we come back, and I'm looking forward to these next couple of UFC pay-per-views. I think hopefully they go off well, and hopefully those main fights stay intact, because I'm looking forward to those events.
210's a little shallow, but 211 is stacked to the gills. 211 is pretty bonkers.
Yeah, but 210, I mean, we're finally getting Cormier Johnson too, and Weidman versus Musasi, which is a great middleweight matchup. And we'll see where Weidman is at this point, and we'll see if Musasi can get closer to that elusive title shot. So there's some good stuff on that card, I think.
Yeah, it's not a bad card. It's just, again, for a pay-per-view, it's those two fights, and then everything else is a little bit...
Alves versus Cote is a decent fight, I think.
Yeah, it's not awful, and Brooks versus Oliveira has some interesting potential, but...
Cote had the loss to Cerrone, but before that, he was doing pretty well for himself, as I recall, last year.
Yeah, he had a pretty good run going.
He was having a good run at welterweight, I'm looking forward to this card. As long as these fights, unless we start losing fights, and abandon ship.
Hey, we got two weeks to go.
Yeah.
count the hours, because again, these things are falling
don't
apart.
Don't jinx it with your Cthulhu voodoo magic, Robert.
Hey, those were not the two fights from last night's card I would have cursed, just to be clear.
All right. Awesome. Anyway,
all right, I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I will see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening.
All right. Very briefly, this coming Tuesday, Mark Radulich and I will be on Damn You Hollywood. We'll be reviewing Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast, which, again, as Jeff mentioned, massive opening. Its worldwide opening, I think, makes it one of the six or seven largest openings of all time. Apparently, Disney now holds like 7 of the 8 or 6 of the 7 largest worldwide openings ever. The only thing holding them off from having all of them is Jurassic World. I mean, like, it's Disney. What are you going to do? So we'll be reviewing that. And then I think Thursday, Mark and I will be reviewing Iron Fist. I'm kind of with Jeff on this one. There's issues, sure. But it is not nearly as bad as a lot of the critics have made it out to be. So you can listen to Mark and I review it. And then for the first time when reviewing a Marvel Netflix series, because we've done this for every other one of them, we're actually going to devote a segment from Damn You Hollywood into it. And that will be Mark and I yelling at critics. Because for the other ones, whether we agreed or disagreed, again, there was good and bad, and I thought Luke Cage was a little overhyped, but that's just me. It was generally good, and the critics we felt were, again, generally both fair and accurate. And then for some reason, with Iron Fist, they're way out there in left field, so we'll yell at them about that. It's probably Wednesday, actually, now that I think about it, not Thursday. One of those two. Like the Radlich on in Broadcasting Network on Facebook, and you can get more regular updates than you'll get from me here. So feel free to tune in for that one, as Mark and I will have at that. We'll be back on the 2nd of April to preview UFC 210, and I think that's it. So, I will be in Fact or Fiction this week in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. So give that a read. Vote for who you think won. Hopefully me, but as always, vote your conscience. Vote for who you think won. Again, I hope it's me, but if it's the other guy, vote the other guy. No issues there. Just vote for whoever you think won. All right, that will wrap us up here. Again, back in 2 weeks. Until then, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm going to remind all of you out there to please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.